Welcome, everyone, to tonight's episode of Pivotal Change. I'm your host, Ryan Kahn. And instead of my traditional howdy from Kentucky, you're getting an aloha from Maui, Hawaii. I have a special guest on this episode. This is a show that's all about leadership, influence, and developing people to make those one or two key pivotal changes on their path to success. And we have somebody that does just that with wonderful people. In just a moment, I'd like to introduce you to Jasmine Davis. And we're going to be talking about conversations that really just change everything. She's got an incredible background. She is a full-time entrepreneur. She is a public speaker. She is the founder and CEO of Pretty Talk LLC. She really engages in having crucial conversations that are committed to cultivating brave conversations with people centered on character and leadership. If you know anything about this show, that is a ton of what we're talking about. She does it especially for young women, and she's got a background by being a graduate from Ohio State University and Boston University with a career in juvenile justice and administration. That's something that I believe has really ignited her passion, but we're going to ask her specifically about that in just a moment. Jasmine, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ryan. Thank you so much. And I really love how you said pretty talk. That just made me smile. Thank you.
Sometimes from Kentucky, we say our words a little different, but
I love it.
It's fun stuff. So Jasmine, I want to jump in with maybe a little bold question real quick and then start developing a little bit about your background. But, you know, this is a world, a lot of first impressions, it's a world where people cast judgments, both positive and negatively, and a lot of different things. If someone were to meet you and have a discussion in the first 5 minutes, what would they learn about you and what might they get wrong in that discussion?
Ooh, that is such a good question. I think they would learn that I am not afraid to tackle uncomfortable conversations. I might, depending on who I'm talking to, right? I have to assess who I'm talking to and know, hey, how should I bring this up? When? I might even be a little shy, again, who it is, but I'm not afraid to tackle those uncomfortable conversations. And I think that that has really helped me in the development of Pretty Talk and understanding what it is that I want to do. I love the shock factor on people's faces when young people look at me, when adults look at me like, oh, she didn't just bring that up. I did, because I think it is critical that we make space for things that most people are only thinking in their head, but they need to say out of their mouth. So
I really like that. We make space for what people are thinking in their head, but really need it to come out of their mouth. I think that's an important part, because there's so much that people just leave left unsaid. And we've had a lot of those conversations in our family and our business, but you have a specialty in it. So outside of titles, because I mean, you're a CEO, you're a public speaker, you're a founder. What are the personal values that you're most protective of that leads you down to this path of doing what you do?
Yeah, so my personal values absolutely are honesty. I think that we should always be striving to tell people the truth, no matter what, if it's going to impact us, if it's going to make us, there we go, uncomfortable, if it's going to challenge us ourselves. Honesty is huge, because I'm a really big proponent of that is what's going to actually get you to where you want to be. So I could go on and on about that and really dive in, but honesty, I think the next thing for me is family, and recognizing this is something in juvenile justice that we really, really were starting to craft and develop as I was actually exiting to start Pretty Talk. But the fact that family is not just your blood, right? For a lot of, especially young people, since that was the area I was coming out of in juvenile justice administration, it looks different, right? Our core family, our parents may not be the ones who we consider our family. And so for me, when I say that's a value, it is, because I think that you have to be flexible enough and open-minded enough to realize that family comes in all shapes and sizes for different people. And we have to really make sure that we give space for that, because I think that family is the foundation of helping people to develop and to grow, whether you're an adult or a child. So honesty and family are definitely two pillars of who I am just as a person.
I love that so much. And I really like your emphasis on family. It's not just your blood. There's great scriptures about people that have become closer than brothers that are not family. We've taken people into our home that are not family and now have become family. And so, the blood, and I think that's really important. And honesty is what curates those relationships. So I think your pillars are absolutely fantastic. And I think you're a rare person to be able to see that and stick with it. So now you had mentioned previously and knowing a little bit about you that your purpose is really in serving community and improving systems and things like that, of course, through juvenile justice, as you mentioned, and stuff like that. Where did that ultimately come from? Like, what made you want to start doing that? And is there anybody that first molded you into getting along that path?
Yeah, well, I always take every opportunity, let's go back to family, to bring up my amazing parental unit, Morris and Sharon Davis Jr. I will always call them out because they are absolutely the pillars of who I am today. My father is now resting well, and I'm so happy for him in that. But it's sad on this side. Because I wish he was able to see all the development that is happening as a result of him. And I say that because you would not necessarily look at me and think, oh, she had a lot of trouble when she was growing up, but I absolutely did. I could not make it in the traditional public school setting. My brain was so advanced where my peers were. And then I was bullied. And when I realized that I could use my height and my weight to make sure people didn't mess with me, I became the bully. And I always tell young people that because I'm like, I know both sides. And for me, it really shaped how I not only see young people, how I not only handle young people, but then also how I develop pretty talk to actually make a difference and an impact in their lives. Most especially, I always got in fights at school when people would be like, what? You and I did, and it was just like, I'll get you before you get me, or anything like that. I did not like people bullying me. That was a big, big thing. And I remember I got all the way through, almost through all of elementary before my mom realized we got to switch the system because it's not serving her. And she did. And I remember the first teacher that ever was like, we're going to change this thing. We're going to turn this thing around, because your parents are your parents. So they definitely had their way of getting me together, making sure that I was on track and you're not getting kicked out of this school again, all those things. But the first teacher was my principal, Mrs. Thornton. And she looked at me and she said, if you don't fight, I'm gonna take you to Friendly's. And if anybody from this area knows, Friendly's was the ice cream spot that you would go to and just enjoy yourself. And she incentivized me so much, but it wasn't just the incentivizing. It got up here in my mind that someone is expecting me to do better. Someone is expecting me to make a different choice when right in the moment I'm angry or I'm upset or I'm frustrated, I'm mad. And I wanted to do it. And for children, most of the time, they are looking for ways to please the adults, and they're like, look at me, look how I did this, look at that. So now when I see a young person in juvenile justice that's struggling or they're trying to figure it out, I think of myself as Mrs. Thornton. How can I encourage them and incentivize them that, yep, you might make a fumble, you might mess up here, but we're gonna keep going and I'm gonna keep incentivizing you. And that's not just monetary things, right? But praise, the reminders that they are capable and able and all of those things. Like it's such an impact because it did for me. And that her, what do I say? Her investment in me, there we go. Her investment in me, it trickled all the way through the rest of high school. It really impacted the way that I saw myself and I saw how I integrated with other people. And so that really, really has impacted how I show up in the work that I do today is because an adult made an investment in me. And that's also why I not only want to pour into the adults, but I want the or into the young people, but I want the adults that are pouring into them to realize that how you show up for them, it actually matters. Because when they're far removed from elementary and middle school, like I am right now, they will never forget Mrs. Thornton. They'll never forget her. So they'll never forget you.
I love that. I think you're sending such a powerful message on how much it is to model good behavior, to be a mentor, and like you said, invest in people, incentivize them in the right way. Just dingling the money is not always an incentive, but sometimes somebody just knowing that there is something better expected out of them is an incredibly powerful incentive. I once had an athlete of mine come up to me like out of the blue, and this person's kind of a cold stone, you know, not a lot of emotions, and just said, I've never had someone believe in me the way you believe in me, and I just want to thank you for that because it made me change. And they described their path. So that was very interesting. Let me do one more quick question before we go into the break. So and if you include some of your early juvenile justice administration, and what did that environment teach you and also ultimately lead you to make the statement, I am building Pretty Talk LLC, and what did you have to do to take that risk?
Yeah, absolutely. So what it taught me was that youth are youth. And I'm going to explain that, right? Because that sounds so simplistic, but it really is. The young people that are in the juvenile justice system, they are children. They are not adults. If you look at the science behind things, if you really understand, their brains aren't even completely developed. And the reality is that a lot of them had things that were out of their control that were a part of their delays, were a part of their setbacks, right? Mentally, emotionally, right? Academically. And so when you see these behaviors, yes, we have to address them, but I think it's also important, and I'm so grateful for my time in the field because it led me to see that, hey, there's something else behind this. What do we really need to be tackling and not just, yeah.
You just made a really big point that I want to kind of stick a pin in and emphasize, that you said the youth are youth. And, you know, we said that a little jokingly, but they're different. There's science, there's brain chemistry, there's different things about youth. And so we need to draw a line in the sand saying that they have to be dealt differently than fully developed adults. And so I want to explore a little bit of that here in just a second after the break. But for now, we're going to jump to a commercial break. Everyone stay tuned for more Jasmine and more Pivotal Change right after this. You want to know how to stay better connected to this show? Well, you can really easily by going to Now Media TV and watching all of your favorite programming. You can get it live or on demand. It's anytime you want. You just download it from Now Media TV app. You can get it on Roku, on iOS, and you can unlock the nonstop bilingual programming in English and Spanish. You get everything from culture to business to leadership like this. So catch the podcast version as well at nowmedia.tv. And you can even listen on the go when you don't have a chance to watch. Now, we're going to return to talking with Jasmine here. And she just did a great distinction between how we have to make a conscious effort to treat youth differently than adults. And that is so important in our lives because sometimes you just try to, by nature, plug and play everybody the same. So I'm going to have Jasmine continue expanding on that point we made before the break. But also, you have something really special. You say, Jasmine, if you want effective solutions, you have to make real conversations. Can you blend the treating the youth differently with that statement for me?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's start with that blend. I love that. Because treating youth differently, I think a lot of people sometimes might think that means not holding them accountable. And that is far from the truth, right? We're not trying to let them off and let them do whatever. There are consequences to our actions. And, you know, something that you asked me was, you know, how did precede me beginning Pretty Talk? And so that's what I recognize. These young people, they are different because they're children. Like, we have to make sure that we don't adultify them is one of the words we use. And we have to realize that once they are in the system, it is hard for them to get out of the cycle of the system. And that's a whole completely different conversation. So what I recognized was, hey, through Pretty talk. I want to start earlier. I want to get in earlier. This is too late, right? We're trying to get them back and restore them, but how do we prevent them from even getting here? How do we give them the skills to get them to the point where they don't have to visit the system ever in their life? And so, to your point, one of Pretty Talk's fundamental services is teaching them how to have real conversations, getting to the root and to the heart of the cause of their problems, right? So, as someone would say, and I said to myself this week, I don't want to focus on the symptom, the lashing out or whatever. I want to focus on what is causing this issue. And I love telling this story. One of my favorites from last year, a young lady comes into one of my groups. She's very defensive and just, hey, you don't you see me doing something? I'm talking. And I said, well, I understand, but I need you to either join us or you're going to have to dismiss yourself because we're trying to get our group started. And she stared me down for a good 10 minutes. I mean, just like, who is this lady coming in here? And da-da-da-da-da. And by the end, I did a complete reward ceremony for my girls in that group. And I said, who's the most improved? And they all, without hesitation, said this young lady's name. And she smiled, I smiled, we laughed. And I realized in that moment, had I given her the same energy she gave me when she first walked into the group, she would not have benefited from what Pretty Talk could offer her. I would not have benefited from growing as a leader in this space. And we both would have suffered, right, as a result. And so teaching people how to have conversations, even though they're uncomfortable, but how to get to the heart of the truth of whatever their issue is, that is what is going to make all the difference.
That is fantastic. And it's something that you made seem so organic in the way you were telling your story. Obviously, you're incredibly practiced and expert at this. So, when you're walking into a tense room, some type of school, workplace, or community event, whatever it is, what's the first thing you do to help lower defenses, again, without lowering standards? Because we do need to and want to hold them accountable.
Absolutely. Immediately, I introduce myself. I think sometimes we forget that is such a simple thing because we come into a space and we're like, I have a goal, I have something I have to get done, right? But when you are actually trying to lower defenses with people and you want people to feel comfortable and you want to develop relationship, you literally have to let them see that you are a person. You're not just, I love how you said earlier, a title. Right. It's even odd for me. Even now, it just popped up on the screen, founder and CEO. I'm like, I'm Jasmine, right? I am just so chill. If I wish I was in Maui with you. Like I am just wanting people to just relax and be comfortable because as people relax and are comfortable, then you can start opening up conversation where they're like, okay, this is a safe space, right? And I shared it in a different interview, but I like to say curating and cultivating brave conversations because sometimes we equate safety with nothing that's going to harm you or that's going to challenge you. No, I want you to be brave because I'm already going to let you know that you're safe. So now that we're in this conversation, let's be brave, let's be bold, and tackle these discussions the way that we need to.
That's really fantastic. I like that a lot. And in my line of work, I think we say a lot of the same things. We call them courageous conversations, brave conversations. I think we're trying to get to the same point. So let me tell you, we're talking about this real talk, and you have something that you call the real talk method, and it's REAL, and they each got something that it stands for. What problem does that solve, and how would somebody apply it? If you're going to give us in under 5 minutes, how would we get all of that shot and apply it?
Yeah, absolutely. So the Real Talk method, it was actually designed to help adults that are engaging with young people, right? So this was designed because many times adults struggle, right? If you're a parent and you're dealing, a lot of times you're looking at them like, these children are getting on my nerves. I'm tired. I need a break, blah, blah, blah. Like you have that. If you're a teacher, you are just exhausted. I give it up to full-time teachers. I just cannot imagine all day, every day, and I just am like, oh my goodness. So I understand when they're just exhausted and exasperated and they're like, hey, I need a minute, right? So there are times when it's hard to bridge those gaps in perspectives because of age, because of thought processes being different. And so I would encourage an adult, right, that's struggling to make a connection with a young person, right, to consider your behavior when you were younger, right, to consider how you tried to stay distant or how you were uninterested, right, at certain times in your life. And then think about how can I proactively take responsibility to help them to avoid the same patterns that I did, right? And that's going to require that you're a little vulnerable. You have to tell them, oh, I messed up. I remember when I told some young people, I said, oh, I got expelled. They were like, not you. And I'm like, yeah, and it's like that little thing. It's not to just air out stuff and to just, be like, hey, I want you to see how bad I was. Like, no, that is to let them know that, hey, I've been here too. I've made mistakes too. And you can be where you want to be if you decide to make different choices that are going to help you get along, in a better space that you want in your life. So it's just really exciting for me when adults take interest in wanting to know how I can be better at talking to young people, because I think that it's missing in so many spaces.
I can agree with that a lot. I see a lot of adults trying to connect and maybe not having the tools to do it. They think they're doing something good. Do you have any type of like a formula? Is there like any like two or three part formula? Like, how do I tell someone the truth and keep them engaged and don't let them shut down or even give them permission to make all the same mistakes I make?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the first thing is I tackle the mindset, right? Your mindset, you have to go in knowing, like, I'm going to make a difference. And I know a lot of people, especially coming out of the field of juvenile justice, and I have to, like, take a moment and make sure I don't get too excited and on my soapbox here. There are so many people in that field that need to get out of the field because they do not have that mindset, that growth mindset for these babies. Like, we are here to help them get out of this, right? So, look, let me get off that soapbox, Ryan. Your mindset has to be one of growth, right? Then I would say you have to take responsibility for your actions. A lot of times we want others to take responsibility, but we don't recognize I could have said that differently. I did hurt your feelings. My intent was not to hurt you, but my impact did hurt you. And I need to take responsibility for that, right? So taking responsibility, then being intentional about developing trust with other people by allowing them to authentically be themselves, So whether we're talking to young people or we're talking to adults, you have to provide space where if they're shy, if they are animated, if they are very extroverted, if they're more introverted, you have to make sure that you are not judging or making them uncomfortable in a space. You have to design your space so that people can feel welcome no matter what, because you need a variety of personalities and perspectives to be on a team. And so I think that's very important to keep in mind as you are trying to open up spaces for people to be comfortable and to be confident enough to have these brave conversations.
Gotcha. So, Jasmine, we got about 30 seconds for maybe a quick answer before we got to cut to another break. But what's the most common good intention that adults use that actually probably is sabotaging their conversations? Some type of people pleasing or avoidance or something like that. What do you think?
I think one of the biggest things adults can do that can unintentionally sabotage is, hey, I used to be there. I know what it is to be right where you are, and da 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 da. Instead of just sharing their experience, they want to assume that they know what the young person is going through.
That's a good point. I just thought of something too. I haven't asked about how to find you. So let's take a moment right here. Tell us how to find you, whether that's on a website, Instagram, something like that. How would people get a hold of you if they need to learn about these brave and real conversations?
Yeah, so on all social media platforms, we are Pretty Talk LLC. You can find us. Yep, that's our website, www.prettytalkllc.com. And that page is actually how you can get connected to us. So if you want to learn more, fill that information out, and we can definitely stay connected. So that's how you can make sure you stay tuned to how we're growing.
I love that. That's perfect. Everyone, sit tight, look her up. We'll be back at the halfway point of Pivotal Change. We are still rocking and rolling here on Pivotal Change with Jasmine Davis of Pretty Talk LLC. And we are having some incredible, incredible highlights so far about treating youth differently, about how not to sabotage your own conversations with them, and how to build trust for real conversations. So, Jasmine, my question opening up on the second half of the episode is this. When an organization calls you, what are you doing? How do you first diagnose the real communication problem, whether it's cultural breakdown, leadership consistency, some type of conflict avoidance, damage to trust, whatever it may be? How do you diagnose that and move forward from the beginning?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the introduction meeting is all about diagnosing, right, with the leader. So what is it? What's happening? And to your point, all of the different things you just named, right? And a lot of times, when you're dealing with young people, it's not as high level as that, right? It's, hey, they're disrespecting each other, or they are not taking pride in who they are as individuals, you know, low self-esteem, low confidence. And so it really just depends on where the organization is and what their need is, because especially when you're having brave conversations, it can be so broad. So I always try to say, what is it that you need? What's your greatest need here? And then most times it is the lack of effective communication. And so I always try to make sure, okay, do we have to work on these interpersonal skills, or people are understanding how to deal with conflict with one another, right? I love the opportunity to observe group dynamics, but you know how that is. Most of the time when someone's coming in, people want to put on their best behavior. So I would love to do, you know, that when they used to have undercover boss with the group, and you just come in and they have no clue who you are. You know, I would love to do that with groups, because I think that's so important. And then it would be to follow up with the leaders and make sure that we're aligned on observations and what we want the outcomes to be.
I like that a lot. That I think that's a really good way to start diagnosing the leader. I think most people say, hey, come fix my organization, come fix my people. And the leaders don't realize the first thing that you have to fix is the leader, at least make some tweaks or some changes. So when you get into an organization and you start having your work and you get to work with them, how do you know that this stuff took, like it actually sunk in? Are there any signals that you look for, like in the leaders or the youth, of course, like any type of behaviors you can point out, or some type of follow through systems, conflict recovery, any type of boost in confidence that you're saying, I can tell we're having an impact?
Absolutely. So I think the biggest indicators are your social environment. And I say that because a lot of places deal with retention and not being able to keep people to stay in their roles, especially now after COVID. I mean, it seems like, and the word is escaping my brain right now, but it seems like that revolving door, it just keeps going and going. People are constantly leaving positions, and I'm just like, attrition, I think that's it. Thank you, Ryan. Because I'm like, oh man. But then when I step back and I look sometimes, even if I'm not even hired or offered, I'm like, did they not catch that behavior? Did they not pay attention to that behavior? They were already giving you signs that they were exhausted, that they were tired, that they did not want to be there, that they did not feel like they were being used to their maximum capacity, or even to things that sometimes you can't control, like they weren't being paid enough or things like that. You know, a lot of people are already given signs. And so I think it's important that we pay attention to what people are saying without saying it, so that we can be tapped in. And again, that goes back to leadership. Needing to be in tune with their people. And so with that, I think that social environment, but also who do you have on your team? Do you have people on your team that you allow to tell you the truth, whether you like it or not? And I know with a lot of leaders, especially as you continue to develop and you get better and better and higher in what you do, right? It's harder for you to hear someone say, your idea is not good, or this idea is not serving people. And sometimes it can come off offensive, but that's why we give you the skills and we teach you how to say it without being offensive. You know, now if someone's going to be offended, there's really nothing you can do with that, right? But you can do your very best to make sure that you are not offending. So
I like that a lot. I really like, you're going to be your authentic self, do your best not to offend other people, but sometimes being offended is on the other person. They're just going to be offended. And, I think that's really important too, that you said surround yourself with the right people, kind of in your own words. Very powerful leader that says, if you think you're just going to be a person around me that's just a yes man and just tells me what I want to hear all the time, you will not be around me very long. I need people that are going to tell me the truth, whether I like it or not. And so him to be able to put himself in that situation is pretty great. So talking about maybe generational gaps here, especially in the juvenile justice system or just people that want to work with juveniles in general, is there any type of like major one that you see this just keeps coming up in this generational disconnect? How do you bridge that with, people not blaming either side? All these young people are the worst generation yet. The young people saying all these boomers or these old people, they don't understand, How do you bridge that gap and get people working together?
Yeah, absolutely, Ryan. I love this question. And I would literally keep it to you have to find common ground. The generations are so different. They are just so different. And I think the lack of communication and what the values are, right? Those things that mattered, right? The things that we desired within our generations, right? I think once we know that, we can find mutual respect and opportunities to grow with each other. So I'll give you a great example. My mother is a baby boomer and I am a millennial. I was born at the end of the train, okay? I was the last one to the bunch. And it's so interesting when we're communicating how much I have to remind my mom, I can't read your mind. You have to tell me what it is that you need or that you want. And sometimes she would, okay. But then I remember in her generation, they were not given much opportunity to speak up and say how they felt. That was not something that was, encouraged in their day and age. You did what you had to do and you did it quietly. You just kept your mouth shut. Versus millennials, we are the first group of babies that said, I'm going to tell you how I feel and I'm going to say it very strong, And so that's just a little example of recognizing, okay, I can be understanding to the fact that she might struggle to always tell me sometimes, and I have to be willing to open that up to her. But then she also can appreciate, hey, Jasmine just gonna tell me like it is. That's just who she is, and that's just how she feels about a thing, And it makes our relationship so rich. We have hilarious stories in there too. And then we also have our tense moments that's like, yeah, we don't agree right now. But I think that that is all a part of the color of relationship, right? You need it, you know?
No, I like that a whole lot. And I really like what you said about really one of the biggest confusions is that nobody has shared what their values are. There's confusion on what the values are from both sides. And even if our values don't perfectly line up, the fact that I know what yours are and I can, again, pivot to adjust, to achieve and provide for some of your values, I think that's going to strengthen the relationship like crazy. So in strengthening relationships and families, local economy and communities, what does it look like in practice, like after you've come in and had some type of intervention or a workshop system with them? Are there different partnerships? Is there higher retention at places? Do we have certain engagements going on that never happened before? Just break some of that down for us. And how does the leadership bench maybe change in those circumstances after you've come through and applied your hand?
Yeah, so I think, those partnerships, it again just depends on who you're working with and what they expect. So like I do a lot right now with schools. And so it can be really difficult sometimes because principals can be on one page with you, right? But you have to make sure that not just the principals, but their financial teams and their administrative teams are all thinking, okay, yes, this is the direction we're trying to go in, and this is what we want to see. Now, on Pretty Talk side, what's very important to me is to really start navigating and investigating what it looks like to give that data. And it's really interesting because a lot of times in this work, your data is always qualitative. It's not a lot of numbers, right? It's how people are feeling, how they're adjusting, how they're doing. And so really grabbing that data and letting them know. And then especially when you're dealing with young people, you really got to get creative. So how do we do that? And in my mind, even as you ask that, it's making me think about pretty talk. Like, hey, we can start doing things via TikTok. We can start doing things via IG, as far as surveys, because young people, if you get with them and where they're at and you get their brand, they'll tell you, And so that just kind of excited me because I'm like, I can actually take that back and be able to share that information and really more positively show these partners and these schools how investment in
I like that.
businesses like Pretty Talk is worth their while.
I like that. So you also said that, they're willing to share their mind. And I think they're sharing their minds a lot, through social media. The millennials, like you said, were the first generation to really have a voice before you've, so-called earned your spot or seat at the table. And now if we're watching what our people are posting online, our young people are posting online, what they're sharing, are we even paying attention to that to see how they grow? Let me pivot. We've got just 1 second for a quick answer. I'm huge into missions, core values, and things like that. So founder to founder, what systems protect your mission as you grow, your curriculum, your standards, things like that? What is the number one thing you have to protect yourself at Pretty Talk to stay true to your mission?
Authenticity. I can't show
Authentic.
up like anybody else.
I love that. That's perfect. Well, we're going to go ahead and cut to commercial break and stay to our authentic selves here in just a second for the last section on pivotal change right after these messages. I know you like what you're watching. And if you want more shows just like this one, more episodes just like this, go to nowmedia.tv. You can get us live or on demand by typing in Now Media TV. You can download the app on Roku or iOS. You can even get the podcast for Now Media TV if you just want to listen and you can't watch for some reason, like you're on a long flight or road trip. So stick with us on Now Media all the time to get all of your favorite news, culture, and leadership. So we're going to jump back in with Jasmine Davis, Pretty Talk, for a final segment of the evening. And we've been doing a lot about how to pressure test these things is what we're moving into, and how to prepare to speak and how to prepare to hold the line. So let me ask you this, Jasmine, what's maybe the most dangerous or cautious story that people tell themselves right before they avoid one of these brave or necessary conversations? And how do you dismantle that story?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing people do is think they don't owe people an explanation because they're the boss. I think that a lot of times, when we're in leadership positions, we forget that we're dealing with adult learners. Adult learners are not children, right? So you have to, again, like I said earlier, you have to be very mindful of what audience you're talking to. If I'm talking to children, then yes, there may be a space where it's like, hey, I'm just asking you to do this. We can talk about it later. I need you to do it now. When you're dealing with adults, right? They need to understand why you're asking them to do something, right? It's science, and I don't have time to take you through that, but it really is. And so I think it's very important. And I think a way to make sure that you don't do that is understand and acknowledge not just that you're dealing with adult learners specifically, but that recognizing they want to know where they're headed, right? What is expected of them? What's the direction they're going, right? It provides a structure, right? And that goes back to young people too, right? They really appreciate structure, right? Guidelines, guardrails, those safety nets that help them to kind of stay within the lines. And I think for children, it's different because they don't necessarily know what it is that they're staying away from. But for adults, it's the same, but it's different because they have made mistakes before and they do not want to make those same mistakes again. So leaders, it's really important that we provide that and don't just kind of have that machoism of, I don't have to tell you because I'm the boss.
No, I like that a lot. Simon Sinek goes in and says, explaining the why, it's a power incentive, right? So you can
Yeah.
incentivize people just by explaining why we're doing this and getting mission and vision alignment, which is something I'm huge into as well. And so I think you're really hitting the nail on the head for you can do a lot of avoidance of all of these problems just by taking an extra 30 seconds to explain a why, an extra 30 seconds to show how it supports the mission and their goals and their values ultimately. And the whole I'm the boss, do what I say, I think that stuff died in the 1950s. So, let's do something real quick. Let's say you're getting ready to have one of these conversations. Okay, you probably have some type of checklist that you tell people to walk through, you walk through in your head. Give me a 30-second rundown. What's that checklist to prep yourself for a conversation?
Immediately, what is it that I desire, right? Is it possible in this current climate? And be honest with yourself, right? Because I can have a desire and be very clear that this is not about to happen. And then if it is possible, what needs to be a part of the conversation? What questions do I need to ask, right? Whether they be hard or they're just simple. And then I would say, if you want the effective outcomes, before you open your mouth, remember to use I statements so that you are also making sure that you're being honest and respectful while not, sugarcoating, so that they can know that you're not antagonizing them or you're not attacking them, but that you are simply just giving them the best of your thoughts and your perspective.
I think that what you just said about there's the whole I versus you statements thing, and you can go down a whole path with that one. But the fact that you pointed that as you're getting ready to address somebody using the I statements instead of the finger pointing you statements, that's pretty big. And that may really kind of go into this next question I was planning is that, you want to hold someone accountable, especially the youth in these situations who are already kind of feel labeled and stuff like that. How do you do that without like shaming them, but also getting the accountability out of the conversation and the scenario?
Absolutely. I love this question too. And I love me a good peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So I'm going to say sandwich that conversation, right? And we've heard it before, right? But you give them praise on their progress. Make sure that they know, like, you are doing well. If you can't say that, that's a totally different conversation. So we're talking about if you see the growth, if you see the good, and you just have to make sure that you're sharpening some things and holding some things accountable. Praise their progress, and then invite them to engage in development for their learning and incentivize them when possible. So I think it's important to include people, adult or youth, include them in their development, right? Because sometimes it's like, well, this is what you need. And they're looking like, well, I already know that. And you won't know if you don't ask them, or you won't know if you don't give them some type of test or review to make sure like, oh, they are pretty good at this, right? And so I think inviting them in and then remind them that, hey, we need to see these changes. If you do know, if you are feeling confident in this, then we need to see these and give them a timeline, give them a guideline, like, hey, in the next week, in the next 2 weeks, in the next month, this is what I need to see from you, especially if it's something that needs to happen quickly versus if it's long-term, then you can do your 30, 60, 90 day approach. And then again, close that sandwich up and remind them that you are there to support them. You are there to help them if they find themselves getting stuck or in a bind.
Well, thank you for making me hungry with that answer as well. But that was a really profound answer. So I've actually used a sandwich technique a lot. And we just call it a positive sandwich. I like peanut butter and jelly better. But my kids start to recognize that. They're like, oh, you're just doing a positive sandwich. And now I have to call myself, oh, I'm doing that because I need you to know that I believe you are a better person than this one issue. So then I have to reinforce the positive sandwich because they know what I'm doing. I've kind of shared my tactics on that one. So that's pretty funny as well. And then that invitation was really strong. You said to invite them, and you might even use the word invite. But if I'm thinking in my head, hey, I want to invite you into this growth path or this growth mindset or these goals. And those, we set clear boundaries and expectations and we give permissions. It's all part of some of my pillars as well. And you're literally just preaching the exact same thing. So this is really good. So let's kind of get more to even more so into your niche here. So for young women specifically, what does confident communication look like? Because I've got two daughters and I want them to be able to do the stuff that you're talking about today. What does it look like when the room doesn't reward it? And how do you coach that without creating burnout?
Ooh, that is so good. What does it look like when the room doesn't reward it? I love that, Ryan, because it's true. Sometimes in certain spaces, it is not, smiled on, right, when you are confident. And I think that could be for a variety of reasons. People just aren't used to that from ladies or it's intimidating. And so I would always say, walk in confidently. First, we're talking about the physical, right? Head up, shoulders back. I'm not looking down, I'm looking at your eyes, right? In some places that can be considered disrespectful, so know where you are. But I'm making sure that when I walk in, people know, okay, even if they don't know she got something going on, then no, she looked like she got something going on, you know? You always want to present yourself in that way. But then I would say that the biggest things as a lady who is confident, share the space with other people. Allow them to show up as they are. Make sure that you're not making other people uncomfortable by your words or your actions or your body language, right? Hear them, you know, and you don't have to necessarily agree with everything, but make sure that you're creating that space where they're like, hey, I can say, you know, whatever I need to. And then after you have come into the space confidently, you're allowing other people to share that space with you, assertively speak up and be bold and respectful about your thoughts and your feelings, right, about a situation. Because no one likes a pushover. We think we do, but we like people that have their own thoughts and their own mind and that are willing to share space with other people who also have to. Now, when you start talking about compromise and learning all that, that's a whole different conversation, but just to be
Right.
confident and to walk in and to know, like, hey, I'm confident, even if there's other people that are confident or are a little intimidated by my confidence, it doesn't matter. You
Well, I
just
want
show
to
up
jump
as
in
you.
on that statement you said about inviting people in to share that space. If you are confident, if you are articulate, if you have the right body posture, you know how to enter a room, and you intimidate somebody at first, knowing how to read the room and then invite people in that space, I think that's an incredible tip that all the women listening today could write down and do that. Anybody could do that, but specifically young women who are trying to cross maybe some boundaries there. So last question, we need a real quick answer on this one because then I want my audience to write something down. If you could just magically implant one communication skill into every workplace, every school, every juvenile system tomorrow, what would it change and what outcome, why would it change an outcome immediately?
I would say how to communicate when you're offended. And I think it's critical because we are all so different and our circumstances are so unique. Being able to communicate offense and then move forward proactively, it will help lessen and eliminate delays in productivity in your personal and your professional life. So I think everybody needs that skill from child to adult.
That would help the whole world. Tell us one more time how we can find you, get a hold of you, and start getting all of your skills into our lives.
Absolutely. So again, on all social media platforms, we are Pretty Talk LLC. You can find us everywhere. That is our website, www.prettytalkllc.com. And we are growing, we are developing. So there'll be changes even there soon. So come see us.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Jasmine.
Thank you, Ryan.
Everyone else out there wants you to go out into the world and see the change and be the change. We'll catch you here next time on Pivotal Change.